Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
He's back with us again on a Friday morning. Good morning, Waddy.
Good morning, Daniel. What a big day it is.
What a day. A
very exciting day.
Which reason in particular?
Well, the gyms are open, so I know that's a relief for me. I'll be there this morning.
Does that mean more people off the road or more parks for you somewhere?
I'll be in the gym pushing tin. Around about sort of 10 o'clock this morning. It's great that it's back open again.
I don't know how I was able to cope. Yeah, that's a fair point. No, you've done well.
Yeah.
You haven't even mentioned it. Like, that's how strong you've been.
I've been distraught. I couldn't mention it. It's just the thought of the gyms not being open had made me depressed.
No, I can understand. I can understand that. So, well, that's a great day for you then.
It's leg day today.
Leg day?
Right. Yep. Yep.
So are you sort of a posterior chain sort of guy? Are you doing your deadlifts, or are you straight to the squat rack, or you the push machine? So what's your go?
Maybe all of that. All of that.
Some lunges.
Yep, all of that sort of stuff.
Anything else that I haven't mentioned?
No, you got to keep going.
Thought I might. I'll tell you one man who knows plenty about leg day. Boy, are they sexy. Adam Ramanauskas is a former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. Rama, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Well, I'm a little bit disappointed this morning because usually I see your big sexy legs, the big, you know, bits of, they're like a leg of lamb sort of thing, you know, that sort of style when you look at that and you go, oh. Today, though.
Like a piece of that.
Today, you're a pantsman.
I am a pantsman today because you know what
happens. Just remarkable. You know I think this is one day a year. It must be National Pants Day.
You know what happened last night, Rama? The pilot light went out in the gas ducted heating system.
Oh.
So we had a cold house for a period of time. I sort of turned it back and I said, what's going on? It's cold in here. I went and checked the screen on my ducted heating system and it was kaput. Oh, dear. So the house was very cold. It required a tracksuit pants situation.
You didn't know how to turn the pilot light back on?
Well, no, I went and did it. I fixed it. Yeah. But it took a while to warm up.
Warm up, right.
It took a while to get going again. So,
do you need to get this, the ducted heating now serviced?
Well,
considering that the pilot light's gone out?
That was something Rebecca suggested. It means it's another phone call. I'm going to get someone in. And I'm not into that sort of stuff. We'll give it a while. If it busts up again, I'll get someone in.
Yeah.
But if it's, I'll give it a chance to find its course and straighten up. So, when you wake up in the morning after tracky pant night, I've got no interest in working too hard to find decent clothing. Yeah.
They feel good on your legs.
Oh, they're a terrific guy.
They are.
They're just a terrific guy.
Real underrated, aren't they?
It's a real professional setup today where we've got two of our four people in here wearing tracksuit pants.
Correct.
There'll be three.
Boomer's 100%.
Certainly.
100%.
As Juppy has just reminded us off the text message, 0416 90 50 52, it is 50 Cent Big Mac Friday.
That is true.
So that is today.
That is true.
It's an interesting burger choice, the Big Mac.
Well, so
it's not a real go-to.
I haven't been there about 15 years for a Big Mac.
I reckon two, maybe three times a year. But just you slurp.
Slurping your cup of tea, gym boy.
it's protein shake.
What is going on?
No, that was very unprofessional.
It's like I'm sitting with my grandfather. Yeah. All you need
Got
is
my
a little
ice Vovos.
All you need is a little biscuit now, just dip it in.
Sorry about that. So, yeah, as you know, it's not a cup of tea. It is a protein shake. Just getting ready for my 10 o'clock session.
My goodness. Well, what were you saying before we were rudely interrupted by the slur?
50 Cent Big Macs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's not a go-to. I'm more, I must admit, I go to the McChicken a lot.
Well, why don't you get a KFC if you go? I don't understand this.
I like the sauce. I like the McChicken sauce they put in it.
There you go. It's worthwhile.
Yeah.
It is worthwhile.
You've got two options. You've got Red Rooster or you've got KFC if you want a chicken burger.
I actually get the McChicken sauce in a little container so you can dip it in with your chips.
I like what you've done with that.
Yeah. That's good. It's good stuff.
That is good.
And a real underrated burger at McDonald's is a McFeast.
They don't have them anymore. Are they back?
Yeah, no, they got them.
They got beetroot.
No.
I thought the McFeast had beetroot.
We're not the fish and chip shop.
Well, beetroot's terrific on a burger. That's terrific. But you're right. You're right. You're right. You're 100% correct about your burger choice. Yeah. The chicken McChicken. It works okay. Yeah. Now, just for the Big Mac fans out there, the juppies of the world, who are keen to invest in the 50-cent extravaganza today at the Arches, it's a one-per-customer situation. I did some digging last night. Of course, I have an employee of the organisation living in my house. So she was all across it.
What percentage off does she get with being an employee?
No, 50% half an hour before and after the shift.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah. So encouragement. I like that.
So encourage, come in, encourage sit mum down, and dad to get there early.
Have your feed beforehand, really fuel up.
Yeah.
Then work really hard, and then you're hungry again, then sort of fuel down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. There's a little bit much for me.
What about outside the window?
Well, nothing.
Oh, that's disgraceful.
Well, that might not be true. That actually might not be true.
Imagine Whitey preparing in the back there in the kitchen part of McDonald's. He'd make this burger, one for you, one for me. Then he'd go to the chip machine. Oh, yeah, I'll just have a couple of chips. Then he gets the chocolate sundaes. Oh, geez, that looks good. I might have a little bit of that too. It'd just be,
well,
be constant
heard,
all day.
This is a rumour, but I've heard that if you work at Cadbury's, you're allowed to eat as much chocolate as you like while you're there.
Gee.
Because the feeling is that with that rule, people just go crazy in the first week or two, and then they're sick of chocolate and they don't eat it anymore. I've heard, I don't know whether that's true, but I think it might be.
No, I think that's true too.
I don't know whether it means they can take off the conveyor belt and just eat it like Augustus Gloop or whatever his name was. But
fell into the chocolate river.
Yeah, that's right.
What a fella.
And he goes up the chute.
Yeah. Up the chute. They always squeeze. It was a bit of a squeeze there at one stage. And he had the pressure to build up. He's like a cannon, out of a cannon in the end.
But I think you can just eat whatever you like.
That is a timeless movie. Timeless.
Sadly, the remake, the Johnny Depp remake,
was
horrific.
A little bit dark.
It was very dark.
Yeah.
But I didn't have another go.
I didn't like that. I didn't like that at all.
But my kids absolutely love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
You're right. It's timeless. Even to the point when they went through the glass elevator, went through the glass ceiling in the and you could see the rope, the piece of string dragging the elevator along the screen.
Yeah.
Such was the 3D graphics and the special effects going back in the old days. No, it was great, one of the great films. Off the SMS, people in suffering sassafras won't have power for 3 months and your heater went out. What's that got to do with the world? Anything crazy?
It's 3 weeks.
Just telling you a story.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
That's
point.
Why I've got tracksuit pants on. That's the
you're
story.
Sort of complaining.
I get too bogged down in detail.
You're complaining. These sort of people there.
Not complaining. I'm just saying I need a tracksuit pants. It was cold.
With candles at the moment. They haven't got some haven't got open fires like you probably do at your house.
Well, that would be... In fact, I imagine most of those places would have open fires.
Some might not. So they just can't get any heat.
Well, I'm just saying that a lot of them in that area would have open fires.
They're wearing what the cool kids call now hoodies.
Oh, yes. There's a few of those floating around my house too.
The big... that's why you need to invest in one of them. You'd love it.
That like full sleeping bag type situation.
No, it's an oversized hoodie.
Yeah. No. Most of my clothes are oversized at the moment.
Well, that Fitzroy jumper you wear, it's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, similar size. A
bit bigger and fluffier. Mm. You'd love that. You'd love that.
Now, obviously last night, Dave McKay, are we going to hold it?
No, we'll get there, because John on the road is going to open the batting for us on that. 1-300-652-927. Hello, John.
Hey, young fellas. Yeah, a couple of points, mate. I'm really happy that gentleman got off from Adelaide, because we want to be playing footy, mate, not keeping off. Stuff like that.
Yep.
Been the last few years. And Merrick, very happy. And can you tell me, can I go to the local footy tomorrow to watch the side that I sponsor?
Which team is that, Johnny?
Chelsea Tigers in the Southern League.
That's a very good question. So,
well, we'll check our local guides. We'll get Frankie at the back to sort that out.
Well,
there was a story going around yesterday that was about 150 cap. For suburban football.
So I got this last night with regards to kids football. So my middle son, he's back on Sunday. So general spectators are not permitted.
Yes.
Parents, guardians and carers who are required to supervise children, including siblings, may attend games. So no entry to the playing arena, so no standing around the huddle and listening to the coach. And then there's all other stuff about social distancing and the like. But I would think, John, that you cannot attend a game as a general spectator this weekend.
We'll get that confirmed for you, Johnny. Stand by. We'll get some more detail on that.
It is... we talked about this yesterday. It is incredibly frustrating where things are at the moment. I just, like, it was actually quite emotional last night. My middle son went to bed, he went to bed crying for a number of reasons, but he was just completely beside himself because he can't play basketball tomorrow night. You know, like...
I like that.
Yeah, but it's terrible that they can't play.
Oh, that's right, but it's good that he's missing it.
Yeah, absolutely, but it's just, this is where we're at, you know, like, he's only six, so he can't understand, you know, he can go to school, they have basketball training outside on Tuesday night, and they can't play on Friday, and he can't,
indoor.
You know, like, and then on Sunday, the eldest can play football, but no one's allowed to go and watch him play.
So indoors, there's still...
grandparents, or, like, it's outside.
No, grand scheme of things, watching them play is not... that bigger problem. Playing itself is the issue.
Well, Campbell doesn't play well unless he's got an audience.
Well, he needs to learn, because at some stage he'll have to play in the Gold Coast if he's going to be drafted, and no one will be there either.
So when people are not watching
him, he'll need to learn how to play.
Could have a player that you would become.
so the watching, the family watching thing,
but the whole thing's the whole thing's out of whack though, Daniel.
But that's been from the start.
58,000 people can go to Chadstone, probably more.
Correct.
In an indoor situation, and you can't go and watch your grandson play football on a Sunday outside, or in John's case, you can't go and watch your local team play outside. It's just, I don't know. It sort of hit me last night about for the kids. I mean, a lot of these kids couldn't play any sport last year, and they're all about their development time, and then they get a taste of it this year, and then it's off again. A lot of kids just go, you know what, I'm used to not playing, I'm not interested. Learn to do other things. And a lot of that will be playing computer games.
Well, I think that's our role as parents to encourage that, encourage team sports particularly, but sport and activity as parents. So that's our job to sort that out, I reckon. We can do that. That'll
yeah, I get that. I get we'll that. But a lot of kids will stop playing.
My kids have had a computer-free week.
My kids have got an iPad-free week coming up after last
night. Well, stand by. More on that shortly. Yeah. More on that shortly. John, the short answer to your question for Chelsea Heights tomorrow is probably no.
No, it's a no.
Clubs are permitted to have 150 patrons at the ground. The number includes all players, coaches, umpires, trainers, and the like. The intention and the hope is it will be for this weekend only, and by next Saturday, clubs will be allowed to have supporters again. But if you live somewhere near Chelsea Heights where they're playing tomorrow, John, and you have a dog, or you have just some activewear, I'd just be walking around the building and doing some laps, cutting some laps.
Well, that's the thing. It's how is it going to be placed? Like, unless the ground at Chelsea is completely fenced in, it's going to be pretty hard to manage. Now, like, for example, say the the NAB League, which recommences completely this weekend.
Yes.
Oakley are playing at Warrawee Park.
Where's that? I know that name.
That's just on Warrigal Road there,
right near
Chatty.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yep.
So no spectators allowed, et cetera, et cetera. But it's an open space. It's an open park, basically, where people can walk. So if people want to go and watch, I imagine they can just, like you said, take the dog down on the leash and stand there and watch.
It's going to be tough to stop them.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to stop, John. I reckon you can find a way if you really want to, Johnny, but within limits, of course, and responsibly and all that sort of stuff. Pete's at South Morang. Hello, Pete.
Morning, gents. How you going?
We're going well, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Especially after last night, I'm really glad that Mackay from Adelaide got off. It's a contact sport. We've known that since the day we all started playing, and probably none more so half than you and Rammer. When you go out there, you don't have to sign a waiver, but you just know that at some stage you're going to get hurt. It's not going to be a deliberate. It's going to be an accident. You're going to get hurt. And I'm just really glad that the AFL and the game itself is not going to be too much tarnished or changed by what happened with the Adelaide and Security bloke. And I just want to have a quick crack at David King. He's the only media personality / expert, if that's what you want to call him, who went the other way and said, oh, this bloke must be rubbed out for 4 or 5 weeks, whatever he said. He's an absolute fool. If they had have rubbed him out, what would that have told everybody else in the AFL? That you can't go hard for the ball, that no matter how far the ball's away from you, you can't run at it? So I reckon he was wrong, everyone else was right, and I'm glad it got off the way it did. Mm.
Good on you, Pete. Just on King, I mean, King and I had a punch on about this the other day, discussing this situation.
Verbally, not physically.
Verbally. Was it on the phone? It was text initially, then we had a conversation about it.
Oh, you did end up talking?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
How'd it go?
It was good. We debated the issue strongly. Me from my side, and clearly, as Pete was saying, Kingy from his side. Kingy is all in on the head trauma. He sees where it's going. From like the NFL stories and the situation they found themselves in, he sees it going that down that path. So his certainly strong stance is that the game needs to make sure it's doing everything it possibly can to eradicate any undue head trauma. That's his overarching sort of philosophy, and that's cool. I don't mind that as a basic philosophy. But what we need to understand is that sometimes there will be situations that you can't govern against, you can't legislate against, and I think this one was one of those. The McKay situation was one of those. Because fundamentally, as you agree, Pete, and I agree, and I think the panel here agrees, you should be entitled to compete for a disputed ball. Correct. As a foundation movement in the game.
Do you think as a result of what happened and the subsequent conversations that there will be a change to the rule, which will mean moving forward that David McKay won't be able to do what he did?
Well, we'll find out today. Hang on, Steve Hocking needs to get on the front foot today. There needs to be a press conference today with Steve Hocking to find out whether or not they are keen to update the regulations, update the laws of the game.
Give me an example then of what can change. What could...
No, I don't know.
What could Dave McKay do differently there?
I don't know, because I don't think he could do anything differently, but I have a suspicion that as a result of what has happened, that there will be some sort of tightening of the rules.
See,
changing to the rules.
I don't think this is the incident that could change it. Because if you read the evidence last night, what Adelaide used, it was 0.04 of a second difference.
With contact.
When Hunter Clark hit the contest and when Dave McKay hit the contest.
And I think it's really dangerous if, you know, dealing these incidents in freeze frames and all that sort of thing it becomes so unfair on the player, because clearly they don't have the time that is made out that they have to make a decision on these sorts of things, because it is an instinctive thing.
So right now what we know is if you choose the bump and you injure or hurt the other player, you suffer the consequences.
Yep, and that is fair and happy. We're fair and happy with that.
We understand that. I think all players understand that. Yep. You look at the Paddy Dangerfield and Jake Kelly incident earlier in the season. Paddy chose the bump and he suffered the consequences.
Yep.
Okay?
No dramas.
This one here, this is not... I don't think this is the incident that we should be changing the rules on, because they're both competing for the ball. They're clearly both competing for the ball.
Couldn't agree more.
So I think we've got to be careful. That's why I'm with you, Whitey, and Half. I'm very interested to see what the AFL's reaction to this is. But I just don't think this is necessarily incident.
I agree, Rama, but I think the problem is going to be it's all about the consequence of being made accountable for injuring someone in the head. And I don't think you can legislate something for this particular situation. Because as was said before, if you start getting people hesitating going after the ball, you might get more injuries because people are second-guessing themselves, and you'll get a farcical situation where people won't want to pick up the ball.
So the head's there, right? Okay. So we get that.
Yep.
You suffer the consequences if you choose to bump. If a player slides in and breaks a player's leg, which we've seen in the past, that player rolls their ankle, or
change that rule.
Peter Foster.
Yeah. No, but hang on.
Jamie Lawson.
Is that then...
Jamie Lawson? What? Yeah. He didn't get slid in on, did he?
Oh, I think he did years ago.
He broke his leg, I remember. No, it wasn't a sliding.
Who was? What was? Where? It came in over an incident in Sydney.
Yeah,
Gary Rowan.
Gary Rowan.
Lindsay Thomas.
Yeah, Lindsay Thomas slid in and broke Gary Rowan's leg.
Yeah, that's why that rule came in. I mean, that was a freak sort of one-off thing too.
But that's what I'm getting at. Not many people like that rule, because you're told as a junior kid, go and get the ball, go and be first to the ball, go and win the ball. Mm. You slide in.
Or you get down low and protect yourself.
That's right. Again, rather than looking at this one incident, we should be teaching our juniors how to protect themselves when they're going for the ball. And I know this is something that you work on basically exclusively in training. Really, how to go and protect yourself when you get the ball. How to turn your body. How to use your backside to protect yourself. You know, that should be the change.
Do you know the problem with that, though? The problem with that is what we're seeing more and more, Rammer, is that the people who do use their bodies effectively and to protect themselves are the ones that are getting in trouble because they come up against players that don't.
They go head first.
And they get hit in the head. So we're actually creating this culture of don't worry about learning how to do it because you're going to get penalised if you
do it.
Exactly. I thought
so that's such a bad situation to be in.
I thought Damien Hardwick's comments about his player, Mansell, a couple of weeks ago, when it was in the incident with Joel Selwood, where he went in head first, Selwood went in, turned his body, Mansell got himself hurt.
Yep.
Damien Hardwick came out after that and said, look, I've got to be better as a coach. I've got to teach Mansell how to protect himself more when he goes into a contest. That should be more of the messaging here around how to actually protect yourself on the football field.
There's Will Day, he went in really awkwardly. And
what was what John I was talking about yesterday with Wixon Day?
Yeah, it might have been that one, yeah. And I know what Wicks did was not good, but I don't think what Will Day did was particularly good either.
These are the things we talk about.
That's right.
We've got ramifications from changing one law and things open up the other, and exploitation of these laws and games.
But again, I think a lot of coaches, in their belief, when a player gets to AFL level, they think they already know how to do these type of things. They already think they know how to protect themselves.
Well, they should.
They should. So that's what I'm saying. In our coaching manuals with junior football, whether it's local football or the elite pathway systems, we still need to be teaching these kids, boys and girls, how to protect themselves.
A lot of them do it to fish to get free kicks.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. So, but that's the problem, Whitey.
Of course it is, but that's one of the key reasons they do it, because they know they'll get a free kick.
And you're getting more of these situations because the game encourages you to keep your feet because you can't jump on the ball anymore. And then all of a sudden you find yourselves in these situations. So we're getting different scenarios in the back of law changes that we hadn't really intended when we made these changes. But I agree with you fundamentally. This isn't the incident to change it. If we start having to measure players' speeds for an oblong ball that bounces in different directions, when sometimes one bounce you're in the contest, next bounce you're out of it.
But this is the thing, Daniel. We are dealing with a 360-degree game with an oval-shaped ball that bounces in unpredictable directions. Yeah. It's an unpredictable game. That's what makes the game such a good game. So as soon as you start taking away the instinctiveness of playing that game with those two key fundamentals, you may as well give up. Go and play tennis or lawn bowls.
But
golf. You get hit in the head in golf too.
The AFL's defense was McKay accelerated into the contest. Well, of course he accelerated into the contest because he wanted to be there first.
Yeah. It's his job.
Oh, no, I'll just slow down.
In the corridor.
Of course he accelerated.
Well, as the laws of the game are written, he couldn't be suspended last night. And I applaud the tribunal.
So do I.
For upholding the laws of the game. Yeah. It's not their job to make new rules. It's their job to uphold and to govern the rules that are in place. And I applaud them for what they did last night because that was the right outcome. As far as I'm concerned, anyway, some people will disagree clearly, but as far as I'm concerned, that's the right outcome. And if from today onwards there's a new edict on that, that's different. But up until last night, as they sat, those laws couldn't suspend David McKay for that action.
You would love to hear from David Neates, Paul Williams, or Richard Loveridge today as well. They're the three-panel tribunal members.
Yep.
You won't hear from them, but I think we should hear from somebody today.
We should
today.
Hear from Steve Hocking today. Because they're the ones that escalated this. The MRO didn't have any issue with this. Michael Krishna didn't have any issue with this. And the AFL said, hang on a second, fella. We want to find out what this means in our game. And they were found to be, they're a bit exuberant, perhaps. Let's get to Phil Murphy, host of ESPN SportsCentre. It's a conversation that's going on in the world of US sport at the moment. He's back with us on a Friday morning. G'day, Phil.
Hey, how you boys going?
We're going very well, mate. This concussion thing, the NFL are front and centre with all of this, and we've had our own little issues through the AFL and the NRL, in fairness, of recent times. Is it becoming any clearer, or are there any new legislations in the NFL to try and take away that contact of the head more so than they've done already?
Yeah, the NFL has a competition committee that meets annually in the off-season, which is about now, and they talk about different harsher penalties for high tackles and lowering of the head. I mean, very similar to things you'll hear in a couple of footy codes in your way. And the whole, I mean, if we can put aside the platitude that, yes, concussions are bad and agree on that, how far can you go to minimize those without completely altering the nature of the game? And, you know, the old school supporters of teams that, you know, every time a flag's thrown for a hard hit on a quarterback that a decade ago was legal, they're complaining that the very fabric of the game has changed. But at the same time, nobody wants to see stars sidelined. What made the Super Bowl so memorable is that Tom Brady was fit. And Tom Brady and other quarterbacks have a higher likelihood of staying fit if they're not taking shots to the head. So I was hearing the debate you boys were saying, you know, having a few moments ago. Very similar conversation here in our primary footy code, the NFL. And it's that tenuous balance of maintaining the nature of what is unequivocally a very physical game while keeping your stars and you know, forget that the fact that they're stars, they're people, for keep them safe and fit both while they're playing and after they retire.
Yeah, it's a good point. One of the lines that or the schools of thought from the people that want to really be harsh on this stuff and be aggressive and change the game is that we need to start to change behavior of the athletes, and they need to understand it. Are we seeing that in the NFL? Has there been a modification of behavior from player to player?
Yeah, if anybody's, you know, watched the NFL, you know, set that alarm for, you know, 1 or 3 a.m., you know, in November to get up and watch these games, you'll see that, you know, whereas players used to, when they would tackle a quarterback or a running back, use all of their body weight to fall on the player or, you know, do certain things on certain tackles and take certain angles, some of that behavior is curbed because, again, that's a change that the competition committee made, but the referees are having to adjust on the fly as well. That's something that any of us hate watching any measure of sport is when there's officiating inconsistency. And any time you introduce a new variable or new point of emphasis for the officials, well, then it takes a few weeks and months for that trickle-down to take effect. So what you see in the NFL is usually very harsh legislation on the field in the preseason and the exhibition games leading into the season. And then they kind of try and, you know, it still enforce those rules, especially egregious offenses, you know, while, again, not directly impacting something so core to the game as tackling, which is where 90% of these incidents occur.
And, Phil, in your game in the NFL, you've seen a class action. The past players of the NFL, there's been a major payout in the past, hasn't there, for this?
Yes, there has. I mean, you know, retired players, you know, filing suit, guys who are having physical ailments after their career and saying they're not being properly taken care of. And that's part of the impetus for the NFL to change, sadly, is, you know, that it took a bit of a financial hit for them to realize, okay, not only do we want to preserve, you know, these athletes today, but we may be paying the expense tomorrow if these guys are feeling the effects of any kind of maltreatment or, you know, or what these players are claiming. And again, with the settlement, there seems to be some validity to it, is that they were encouraged to cover up the effects of concussive injuries and then, you know, hurry back onto the field. Now there's a concussion protocol where, again, very similar to, you know, something you see at the MCG in a footy match where, okay, someone's taking a blow to a head, they go under the tent, they go into a concussion protocol, they check and see, you know, what the baseline test is and how they perform vis-a-vis that before there's any consideration of that player returning to the field. You know, the competitor in the moment is often frustrated by that. But again, it's for their own protection and saying, you know, hey, we know you want to get back out there and everything's told you to play through pain and play through, you know, little nicks or whatever it might be. But with head injuries and, you know, second impact syndrome, we need to be very aggressive in treating that and err on the side of caution. I mean, there's a big debate right now in European football with the Euro Championships. A French defender took a shot to the head a few days ago and they squirted water on the back of the neck and put him back on the pitch. People are saying, what are we doing? You know, that guy showed a lot of symptoms of concussion to the naked eye and was never fully checked. So all footy codes across the world, it's a point of emphasis and a very hot topic right now.
Well, and the other hot topic is Ben Simmons at the moment. So,
oh, boy.
Philadelphia vomited all over themselves in the last quarter yesterday, our time. Ben was 4 of 14 from the line in the game, and I think he's 22 of 67 in the playoffs. Is he still at the arena just shooting free throws? Because it's become a real issue for Philly.
Yeah, I mean, I can't explain that. It's an anomaly with him. I mean, even when he was coming out of college, people were debating, is he shooting with the wrong hand? Because you'd see him when he gets near the basket, he seems to favor one hand, and then when he gets to mid-range, he favors another. You mentioned the statistics, 32.8% from the free throw line for the playoffs. So 4 for 14 isn't really an anomaly. I mean, it should be, but it's kind of par for the course. It's, you know, the law of averages at that point. I think it's, you know, you're going from 32.8% to about 28%. And you would say, okay, he only missed four free throws in the second half, right? He was 4 for 14 for the game, two makes and six and four misses after halftime. He was 2 for 6 when Philadelphia collapsed in that 26-point lead. The problem with Philly was they couldn't even trust him to hold the ball. So it fundamentally changed the entirety of their offense. They were having Seth Curry be their point guard and Joel Embiid be forced to play hero ball. And those were the only two players who hit a field goal for the Sixers after halftime. They were up 26 in Game 5 and lost. They were up 18 in Game 4 and lost. They're the first team in NBA playoff history to blow leads of 18 or more points in consecutive games. It is calamitous. And I'm actually assigned to cover Game 7 if it happens in Philadelphia. You know, we have a partnership with 4 and 20, and you know they're selling meat pies actually at the Sixers Arena. And I was set to go, and I was ready to book my hotel. And here we go, the whole thing falls apart. So he better be at the arena still shooting free throws. I mean, this is your livelihood, and shooting the ball is a very fundamental skill. You can't be that kind of liability. That 32.8% is the second worst in NBA playoff history for any player with more than 50 attempts. Full stop. The second worst ever. I mean, it is tragically bad. And credit to the Hawks for taking advantage of it. But the headline here in the States is not Hawks comeback. It's Sixers collapse.
So let's start with race number 6, the Sir Henry Bolte Handicap over the 2,000 metres. Three-year-old Quality Affair, Dino. There is a full field of 15. Sorry, 15 will start. Token Spirit, number 15, has been scratched for the Griffiths de Kock training combination, which means the Spaniard, great name. From Gladiator, will get a run for Danny O'Brien. But Namakwa is at the top of the betting for First Light Racing. Favourite at $4 for Maren Eustace with Benny Allen in the saddle.
Yes, of course he won for us a couple of weeks ago, yes, as the Ramaruffi. And he's a very good chance again. He's very well placed. I love the way he raced in the blinkers last time. He took up a good spot and just dominated that race. And just sets up the same again. The little challenge for him that he rises 4 kilos, but progressive horse, often you can't sort of put a weight ceiling on them. So I think he's a great winning chance again. I think there's a couple of value runners, though, and one of them is Myers Reward, number 9, who I thought ran very well first up and gets to 2,000 metres second up, and I think will be virtually tracking Namakwa into the race. Whether he can get past him is another thing, but he's a quite a promising stayer, and I think he can run well. And conversely, he drops 4 kilos for his first up run. 11 oh so far, ran 7th in the Namakwa race, got badly held up at an absolutely crucial stage of the race and virtually went to the line untested late. Damien Lane taking over. Chances, though, to 5, Sweet Carolina, who ran 3rd in the race I've just mentioned, and 2, Ruba, who ran 2nd, but he's so far into a preparation, I can't imagine he's improving. But want them all on your side. But I think Namakwa's the one to beat. The bit of value might be Myers Reward.
All right, a bit of value in there if you need it, Quinny. But Namakwa, number 1, is the favourite.
And has been a firming favourite as well. 460 into 420, the market leader at that quote. Number 9, Myers Reward. The roughie that Dino just gave a good push for is also firm. 26 into 19 and 480 a place. Dino, you've left out the second elect, Mark Colt, who's actually a gelding, who's been popular as well. $6 into 5, which a little niggle there with the Payne Galloper.
Well, he ran on Wednesday. Whether he backs up or he waits for the final in 2 weeks, I thought he might have just accepted, you know, when the weather was looking a bit ordinary on Wednesday, just as insurance. And certainly that's, I would imagine, what Token Spirit did. And he won that race on Wednesday and he's already been scratched. So I just wonder if Mark Holt will come out. And he's back from 2,400 on a 3-day backup, which would be a little bit of a challenge.
It was a bit of a trial for him Wednesday. Didn't have a lot of luck, but we'll follow that horse with interest, maybe.
Yeah, you can.
Nice work.
That's beautiful.
Nice little drive-by at the end. I like a little drive-by. That works for me. All right, Rama, you have one job.
I do.
On the Friday form, that is to give us the numbers as they are red ploys.
1, 9, 11, 5 and 2.
1, 9, 11, 5 and 2. Your first leg of the quaddy tomorrow at Flemington. Race number 7 is the feature event of the card, Listed Affair, the AR Creswick Stakes, Dino, over the 1,200 metres, down the straight 6 there at Fabulous Flemington. And we have 14 going around for this one. And again, don't have to go too far to find the where the money's going. Top of the order, number 1, Curran, is $4.60 favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, and he should be, Daniel. He's just a terrific horse. He won three starts back. Then he ran second to Ayrton, and then he won convincingly down the straight last time out. Again, a bit like Namakwa, he goes up 4 kilos for winning last time out, but it's a very compressed scale, so I'm not too worried about that. And I think he's got to be a starting point the way he's racing. A horse that I think's making really rapid improvement is number 7, Sir Davy. He won his maiden 3 starts back. He ran well at Warrnambool, and then I thought it was an absolutely slashing win at Sandown Lakeside last start. Comes back in trip, but gets the blinkers first time. I think he'll run very well. 11 Aidensfield, only had the one run in summer, and she pulled up lame, was put away. She's trialled up well around this time last year. She got the runs on the board that got her into spring, and she ran well at stakes level during spring. I think she can run well fresh. And another last start winner in Snickerdoodle Dandy, number 3, who is back in trip, but you know, a stakes race, I think, will suit her. And I heard Peter Moody say yesterday that her actual aim is a 1,600-metre race in 2 weeks, but look for her to be hitting the line here, and I think with that in mind, she'll run very well. But Curran's certainly the one to beat.
And Curran has been the market mover as well. $6 into 460, the clear favourite at that quote. Number 4, Pioneer River. Runner-up to Curran last start on the third line of betting here at $7.50. The stable has 2 in the race. We've got 1 in the Quaridino, the 1 at longer odds. What did you make of Pioneer River?
Pioneer River ran well 2 weeks ago. I liked him a couple of weeks ago in that race. He drew to get down the outside, and he ran really well. Conversely, here he's drawn towards the inside down the straight, whether that's absolutely ideal. Looks like the better chances of drawn wide and might just be, you know, building into the race there, but probably comes down to track pattern there. If the inside's okay down the straight, he's probably some hope.
All right. Bit of a summary there of race number 7, the second leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington Forest on the Friday. For Rama, I wasn't really listening. What are those numbers again, please?
1, 7, 11, and 3.
1, 7, 11, and 3. Of course, I was listening, but that's just a bit of a prompt for you to give us your numbers. 1, 7, 11, 3. The second leg of the quaddie. Let's have a look at the third leg, the Brian Beattie handicap over the 14.20. Another quality affair, Dino, where there are 14 going around. And we have to go a bit deeper this time around to find where the money is going and where the market is leading us into. Dice Roll, who is back-to-back for Nick Ryan. Freddie Kersley is going to be jumping into the saddle. Is $4 favourite at tab.com.au. Is Dice Roll in your numbers, Dino?
He's the top of the numbers, Daniel.
Right.
He has been a bit of a revelation, really, in this late autumn, early winter period. Of course, he had a stint in Hong Kong. He was Group 1 placed as a 3-year-old in France and purchased by Hong Kong Interests, and don't think he really acclimatised to Hong Kong. But his 2 Australian runs have yielded 2 wins, and the format of the race has just been absolutely stunning. And he's well drawn again, well placed. He's had a trial since that last run. Everything just fits in really well. If it's not him, then it's a very, very even race. I think he's clearly the one to beat. I think the best value in the race is Harlech, number 4, who I thought ran okay first up in the Wongoom, and then last start just got crunched at the barriers and ended up out of position and then was virtually chasing all the way and ran pretty well. I think from barrier 1 should get a cheap run, looks over the odds. Romancer was the long odds winner of the straight 6 here a month ago. He's since trialled very well again and now gets to his right distance at 1,400 metres. And 11, Rubisaki, who I thought she ran well last start. And, you know, she only got that one real glitch this time in, was the run 2 starts back. And Patrick Payne on RSN mentioned that she just raced flat that day. So you can explain that runaway. The rest of her form's very good, so she's in the mix as well. But, yeah, it's a bit of a case, if it's not Dice Roll, then it really does open up.
Is that what the punters are telling us too, Quinny?
Dice Roll and Rubisaki have both firm. Dice Roll 6 into 380, favourite at that quote. Rubisaki has been 8 into 5, the second elect at that quote. The initial favourites were Yulong January and Odeon. They're now at 7 and 750 respectively. Dino, Yulong January has won 2 on the bounce, and we see Odeon, who comes through the same form line, having placed behind Yulong January at his last 2 outings. What are your little concerns with those 2 gallopers?
Oh, I read that Yulong January was going to Sydney so for a race maybe next week, is it, I think? He's got the wide draw to contend with, so that's the concern. And Odeon, and they come off small fields, so they all of a sudden they've drawn wide in big fields, so it's a totally different dynamic. So that was my little negative against them. And he's just creeping up in the weights a bit, Yulong January as well, for, you know, obviously for winning, but it's a different challenge if he takes his place tomorrow.
All right, that is the summation of race number 8, the third leg of the quaddie tomorrow at headquarters on the Friday form. Rammer, what are those numbers again, please?
13, 4, 3 and 11.
Race number 9 is the last leg of the quaddie tomorrow, Jack Styring OAM Sprint over the 1,100 metres. A quality affair, 13 going around because Street Tough for Will Clark and number 14 has been scratched, so 13. And again, the top of the order is where the cash is. Red Can Man, David Brightoak, Jamie Carr in the saddle, Dino. First up this campaign over the 1,100. Are you with Red Can Man? Is it in the numbers?
He certainly is in the numbers, Daniel. He's a very talented horse and a very versatile horse. He can sprint well and he can race up to 1,600 effectively. And he's trialled very well. Jamie Carr went down to Terrelgan and trialled him recently and he looked to go very well. He's a good chance. So I think there's a good value chance here in number 8, High Stranger. This horse has won 3 of 5 first up. He has raced well down the straight. He just seems very well weighted to me, and I think he'll run a terrific race. I wish he'd drawn a little bit wider, but can't have everything at the price he is, and I think he'll run well. 10, Montessera, was a little bit unlucky last start. I think she can turn the tables on Sartorial Splendor from that run. Red Can Man goes in, and the other one is The Astrologist, who has got 2 really big peak runs in his career, and both down the straight at Flemington, so I'm suggesting this is his favourite track, and he ran very well, as I said, over the Spring Carnival at 1,200 metres, but he has got an 1,100 metre run here as well, so he's in the mix. But, yeah, a bit of value here with High Stranger.
How much value with High Stranger, Nick Quinn from the Tab?
Plenty. Currently 19 the win, 5 the place.
19 and 5? 19's on top.
What sort of quote do you think High Stranger should be, Dino?
Just on the double figure, around $10. I think that's about his right price.
We'll expect to see that firm dramatically in coming minutes.
Well, I'm going to ban that question from you. I'm going to ban it.
No, you've got to understand.
You bookie types, mate. I know you're dodgy.
No.
You're dodgy.
Completely loaded
question.
It's
explaining
question.
How much meat there is on the bone for Dino's Legion of fans.
We know that, but we don't want you talking to your bookie mates about this stuff and dragging it back in.
I think they're going to find out pretty quickly it's popular when the bets start to flow through for this runner. Trying to educate you, Daniel.
No, I don't want to be educated. I just want the good stuff. I want the good odds.
I'll retire that question.
What else is happening in that market, just by the way?
Red Can Man heads the market at $4.80. Montessera, a $5 second elect. Sartorial Splendor's firm from $8 into $7.50. Dino, Sartorial Splendor's won 2 on the bounce of 3 of his last 4. Do you just think a bit of pressure might undo him here? What's your little niggle with Sartorial Splendor?
Yeah. A little bit, and he's getting up in the weights, and just to probably depending on track conditions, etc. So I just think enough against him to make him vulnerable. And saying that, this is a terrific race. I've left out some, you know, really smart horses. I'm a fan of Bless Her, but she's, you know, drawn right down on the inside. William Thomas has trialled okay. Rock Profit won here last start. I'm Someone was terrific last week. So it's a really good finish to the program. I just think High Stranger is a bit of value.
All right. Well, that's pretty sexy stuff. $19 and 5. We like that activity, Rammo.
Always.
We like that a lot. But I need you to recap those that last leg number, please.
8, 10, 1, and 9.
Now, you're not going to believe this. I missed the quaddie numbers as I was looking for a faded sign at the side of the road that says 15 miles to the Love Shack. Could you please repeat them, says one of the SMSs. That's a genuine SMS that's just come through. Boys, Cole the curator was prepping his Nick Quinn-style salad and had the hairdryer going full noise. Can we please have the numbers again, says Gav the greenskeeper. They punch on all week, Cole the curator and Gav the greenskeeper. They're very funny off the SMS. And then this one from Adam in Templestowe. Can you please give me the numbers again? My kids were trying to dunk themselves into the toilet head first last night, which required a family suspension. More on that through the morning, which actually happened to our man Adam White. But Rama, can you please give us the numbers? Although Trigger says, you're not going to believe it, but I've got all the numbers, stuff those that haven't. Trigger, that's not the way we play around here, Trigger, but appreciate your sentiment. Rama, what are the numbers, please, for the quaddie tomorrow?
Race 6, 1, 9, 11, 5, and 2. Race 7, 1, 7, 11, and 3. Race 8, 13, 4, 3, and 11. Race 9, 8, 10, 1, and 9.
Oh, they're your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at this stage at headquarters for a great day of racing. A good SMS too here. High Stranger would be perfect for the Jack Styring race. He would love calling it. He would too. It is the perfect name for a Jack Styring call. Hi, stranger. Righto, let's have a listen to Dino's formula bet this week. Who are you playing for, Dino? What are your selections this time around?
Dale Churchland of Tullamarine. And for Dale, we are investing $40 the win. Race 4, number 9, Poised to Rain. $40 the win, race 8, number 13, Dice Roll, and $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 4, number 9, into race 8, number 13, for Dale Churchland of Tullamarine.
4, 9, 8, 13, headquarters tomorrow. Quinny, what's that come to, please?
$4.60 times $3.80, all-up comes to $17.48 pre-multiplier.
$17.48, that is good business for the formula bet tomorrow. Good luck to Dale and all those that might have a little sneaky dollar on that through the journey as well. All right. Time for the big one, the Rammer Ruffy.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. Fine-tuned for Australian conditions. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger today.
All right, Dino, between the eyes, please.
It was a bit of a spoiler alert, Daniel, with the last tip, but race 9, number 8, High Stranger, I think $19 is good enough value for the Rammer Ruffy.
I think so. Those numbers again.
I think we're happy.
Race 9, number 8 for the Rammer Ruffy tomorrow.
Currently 19 the win, 5 the place. Looking forward to coming back in about 25 minutes. We're going to discuss how much that horse has been backed.
19 and 5 for race 9, number 8, the Rammer Ruffy tomorrow. High Stranger. Brent Harvey, the AFL Games record holder for the Friday footy preview, back again. And pleasingly, this time, due to the reduction in COVID protocols, is it with us in studio. Boomer, good morning.
Yes, much better being in the studio, Daniel, with you guys. And unlike you said, I have got a hoodie on, not a singlet.
You didn't have it on before.
But I tell you what, if this heater stays on like it is, I will have a singlet on because it is boiling hot
toast
in here.
Joey?
Very, very warm. Yeah. So, it's been a good week again, out and about. Back to running this week, which is great.
The Hammy's back.
So, back out in the field for the Kangas, which is fantastic. And last night, great result, I reckon, for football.
Yes. Well, I was going to ask you about that. I do want to go back a little bit. We spoke to Toddy Goldstein yesterday, Whitey?
Yep.
About the game against the Giants. Mm. And you sitting on the bench, you're a little competitive animal. And you weren't able to get out there in your fluoro and your tight tee.
Yep.
How were you with the last couple of minutes of play there? Because I only was thinking about you. I was watching the game and thinking totally of you.
Yeah, it was a little bit weird because I've got the headset on. David Noble's going off his head in my ear. I've got to relay the message to the runner who can't get out there anyway because you can only go out after every goal. So I'm actually up. The cord nearly came out of the socket. I'm up with the headsets on. David's telling me stuff. I'm yelling out to our wingers to try to get stuff done on the field. It was a little bit of mayhem. In the end, it was a little bit disappointing, I guess, because we're 28 points up. The boys did quite well because GWS not a bad team. But in the end, when you're 28 points up and throw it away, you get a little bit disappointed. But you go back, you review it, and you learn from it. And that's certainly what the boys did. And I thought the review during the week that the coaches put together for the boys was fantastic. So hopefully, we've got a massive test this week again. In Tassie again, which is great.
Yes.
But the Brisbane Lions this week. So big, big game for the boys.
They're a pretty good team, the Brisbane Lions.
They're going all right at the minute, aren't they?
They're going okay. But you'll be out there in the fluoro.
I will be. Yes, I'm back this week running the messages. I think our old runner was a little bit more softer than the way I would tell the message.
Oh, are you quite stern with your messaging?
David has said to me a couple of messages, he says, "And you say exactly how I said that." I said, "Don't worry, you don't need to tell me that, mate, I do." So, he's pretty stern sometimes.
It's interesting, isn't it, with David, because he is great to talk to.
Yeah, he's fantastic,
really,
yeah.
Really friendly and
got a different side to
personable.
Oh, yeah. He's got a real competitive edge.
You can't almost believe what you're saying because of how he talks.
Yeah.
But Todd said the same thing.
Yeah, Rammer hit the nail on the head then. He is a competitor. He is a winner. He's won a lot of the things he's done in life. He's a winner, and he made that no secret. That was one of the first things he said when he came into the football club. He goes, "I am a winner." So he's teaching that now, and he's a great teacher.
That is when he walked in. Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm a winner.
I love it. Well,
I've won Tats Lotto 7 times, Super 66. Well, got a couple of those under my belt.
It wasn't exactly like that, Daniel, but it was pretty much like that. It was great. So, yeah, no, he has got a side. And I, fortunately or unfortunately, and I'm learning a lot, so it's fortunately, but I can hear everything he says through the headset, and some of it's pretty good.
Well, you'd like it because you're
I'm exactly the same. I absolutely love it when he says stuff like that. So, no, I said to him, you don't need to worry about the way I deliver the messages, mate. It gets there the way you want it.
He always knew you're in trouble when the runner came out, and he said, he's asked me to tell you straight. and then proceeded to give the message.
Did you ever go back and say to the runner, tell the coach I said this?
Yeah, I did.
How'd that play out?
No, that didn't go well for me.
Wasn't Dennis, was it?
No, it wasn't Dennis. No, it was Ken Judge. It was Ken Judge. He wants me to tell you. And then he said something I can't repeat on radio. And I said something I can't repeat on radio back. I was, you gotta tell him.
Well, I get a little bit of flack off the boys, and I just say, hey, do not shoot the messenger, and straight away they know that it's coming from the cockroach. So it's all good.
Yes, fun and games. What was the conversation like with the players and staff this week about the David McKay situation? You referenced that before. That was the right outcome last night from your perspective. We agree, by the way. I think most footy people do. And what was the discussion? Was there talk about it in the rooms on the field?
No, there wasn't. Because it happened on a Thursday night, there was so much to play out, so the boys didn't, and we've got our own stuff to worry about as well. So there wasn't. I mean, there was talk about it, but it wasn't. I wasn't privy to all the information the boys would have been speaking about, or the coaches didn't really speak about it. David did ask our opinion and thought how many weeks he would get, or whether he would get off or not, and that was sort of about it. But we haven't changed anything, or and let's all be clear. I think you guys would have done the same. We don't like anybody injured, especially concussion, how big it is now. But that was just an attack on the ball. That was just an attack on the ball. And I don't know who said it, but somebody said it during the week. If he gets done for that, what happens in marking contests now? Because we've been taught to put the knee up. Well, no, it does two things. Put the knee up protects you,
yep,
and it also makes you get higher off the ground because you're driving with your. So if your knee goes into somebody's jaw and they break their jaw, is that exactly the same as going for the ball as a contested player on the ground? So it opens up a can of worms for me, but I thought the right outcome was done last night.
Yep, I think most people would agree with that. The marking contest situation. I was debating this with someone through the week about the ground ball situation as opposed to a marking contest. So what's the difference? They're both 50-50 balls. Yep. You're trying to get access to the ball first in. Ground ball, area ball doesn't matter. Sure, it's just a contest.
Well, there's short players and there's tall players. Tall players usually mark the ball and small players usually go and get it. So you've got to be good at your craft. And we've been taught forever, it's what you do in that last metre to go and win the football. We play a contested ball. Hence why you guys always pick Kentucky's every bloody Friday for face-off. We play a contested game of football, so you've got to go in there and learn how to that last meter, the last meter test. Yep. Rami, you would have had that through the 2000s with the Bombers, and half you would have done the same. Yep. Dennis was massive on it. Last meter, what you do in that last meter is the way you get judged.
Yep.
And individually turns into collectively. If you win the contested ball, 9 times out of 10, you win the game. So it's been like that for a long time.
Yes, it's certainly a much debated part of the game this week, and we'll see whether or not we get a response from headquarters this morning, because they're the ones that sent it to the tribunal after the MRO decided it wasn't a worthy charge to lay, or couldn't lay a charge on it.
Because he didn't do, and I haven't missed nothing, he didn't go past the ball, he didn't tuck the shoulder in to actually make contact, he was actually reaching for the ball as well. And that's the big thing.
Chance.
That is the big thing. He was reaching for the ball, and his shoulder accidentally hit him a little bit high, but I thought his technique was fairly good.
Well, he got through, and hopefully we do hear from headquarters today. I think Steve Hocking needs to come out and talk about this today and answer some questions and state their case about what they want to see going forward.
They might use the what the Royals do, never explain, never complain.
Well, no, I think they need to. If they're going to put this to the tribunal, they're going to throw it in, overarching powers.
Yeah.
They need to make a statement on the back of this.
The game will shift now. This
this is the thing.
But there will be a new rule.
You can't make a new rule
or
new interpretation until such time as the AFL come out and do it and tell us about it. Otherwise, we find ourselves in the same situation.
The game will change. That in 5 years will be a suspension.
No.
You don't reckon?
No.
Well, I reckon concussion is such a big thing in society, sport and society today.
I couldn't agree with you more, but
it won't be. I don't want it to be, but I think it will be the way the game's going.
When was the last one? When was the last incidental collision?
Byron Pickett. That was incidental on Crumb.
Oh, I was 12 metres from that, and I don't think I've ever been more scared in my life.
I was on the bench.
And he didn't even hit me.
I was on the bench.
I want to go off. Take me off, coach.
I couldn't believe what I'd seen.
So that wasn't accidental, you don't think?
Mate, give him a break.
That poor old Crummy is still living in next week. Poor old Crummy. Can you remember a recent one outside of that sort of thing?
Yeah,
an incidental head clash that's caused that level of trauma.
I remember a bad one.
Which one?
James Heard. Mark McVeigh.
What year was that?
That was a long time ago, but that was just a complete accident. Yeah. Obviously, on Mark McVeigh's behalf, but I can still remember.
So we're going back a fair way.
There have been some, but not to the extent of the injuries sustained by Hunter Clark. And this is the thing that frustrates me the most about this, is that it happens so rarely, but there seems to be such an overreaction to something that happens so rarely that, again, the consequences that then follow completely change the game.
That's right, and that's my point.
So it does happen from time to time because
did Sean Higgins have one? He got concussed or a broken jaw or something not too long ago.
Let us know if there's a mess. 0416 90 50 52. Recent additions of a similar type of situation.
Not a bump. It's a collision or an accident. Not a bump.
Can I add something too for the listeners? Right, and I find it hard for people to go and debate at the tribunal against David McKay because AFL is different to local level. So if you've played local level football and you're going to win the ball and mistakes happen, times that at this speed with the best athletes in Australia. Times that by 15, 20. You've got no time to react. The ball's there. You just go and try and win it. So the people that play local football can understand, I've got myself in situations like that. Times it by 20, because that's a different speed. I've played at both levels, and trust me, that's the different speed.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
No, that's a good reference point. Because, of course, you're still living that dream at the moment.
Yeah, so you notice there is a considerable difference.
Yeah, huge. But it's massive. Man, 20, am I exaggerating? Maybe a little bit. It would be 10 times the type of speed, the power, the velocity, everything that you can do at AFL level between the best players and even VFL. I haven't played too much VFL for a long time, but local level now, it's completely different.
Yeah, it's
so if you are listening and you're a local player, and you think, I've been in that situation, it is hard, times that by 10.
Because it's not just about the intensity of the contest, it's just the whole thing. Like, I think we still see players that battle at AFL level, and they're no good. You know, how does they get a game of AFL football? And then they go back and play local football, and they're just completely dominating.
Exactly.
How is this the same player that couldn't get a kick? Anyway. Got a bit emotional there.
It's okay, you're entitled to. A young man who brought a smile to thousands upon thousands of fans of the Red and the Black yesterday when it was announced that he had signed for 6 seasons at the end of 2027 for Essendon, none other than Zach Merritt, who joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Zach. Well done.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for that. Happy to be on here.
Now, I want to know, where does the number 6 come from? Do you go in and say, look, just make it 8 years, and they say, how about 4, we'll meet you at 6? How do you get to 6-year extensions?
I was starting to count up how old I was going, but I didn't realise I was going to be 31 or 32. It's gone that quick. But, I was just keen to show face and look long-term and obviously spread the money across a longer period of time to cater for guys that are coming through and hopefully build a list that will be competitive and look towards having some success as well.
Now, you've done the deal, so you can say whatever the hell you like, but was there ever any doubt that you would stay at the Bombers?
I think there was definitely doubts probably at the end of last year around what the future was going to be holding and what the plan was going to be for the club. So there was definitely a few doubts, but I think when I walked back in the club in November and Truck really took the reins, it was a big shift pretty quickly and it was very evident. I think that the games are sort of just the showpiece for that change.
So, Zach, firstly, congratulations. Was there a game or a moment where it sort of went, this is where I want to be? Or, as you said, it was more sort of a slow build from the pre-season.
Yeah, it was quite funny. I think looking back in the pre-season, we did a lot of sessions, a lot of time and energy focused sort of on our growth and improvement and connecting back to our history. And
I think during those sessions, I really felt it resonated with me, and you know, I felt like that one club player loyalty stuff started to shine. But obviously, I had to wait and see for how the real stuff would happen. And it was probably the games that we didn't quite win, but I felt like we were playing really competitively and consistently as a group, and felt really connected. And to see some young players play well, but more importantly, I think it was more the guys on our list, like Langford, Laverty, and Parrish, that really improved. And for me, that showed a lot of excitement and opportunity and optimism for me.
So, Zach, yeah, well done. Congratulations, mate. It's fantastic that you've been able to commit for so long. Just that doubt that you talk about at the end of last season, how did you firstly overcome that? Because a lot of players we see now, once they've got doubt, they leave the football club. And then secondly, what's impressed you about Ben Rutten so much to, as Half spoke about, commit for such a long time?
Yeah, I think firstly the doubt stuff. I guess when you walk into a club, you want to leave it in a much better place, I guess, than it was when you walked in. And for me, it was in a pretty unique situation 8 years ago. And I just felt like if I had left, it wouldn't be in a better place. And I didn't think that would have sat right with me moving forward. So I guess that's how I got rid of the doubt. It was, how can I improve this place regardless of what happens moving forward? And then to Truck, I think his openness to learn and want to get better individually, but also be pretty stern and understanding and assured of what he wants out of us as players and as staff, I think has been really good. And you know, I think we're a long way to go and grow, but Truck's openness as a person has certainly helped everyone else come in and enjoy work again.
Zach, just on, I mean, I don't really want to bring up the whole thing about being left out of the leadership group and all that sort of thing, but when you look back on it now, do you kind of see it as a good thing because of how much you've grown as a footballer and a leader as a result of that? Or is it just natural development of you and that really didn't have much to do with it?
A bit of both. It definitely had some positives looking back now. I think the weird ability to actually connect back with a lot of players. I think when you're in the leadership group, I didn't really understand that you feel like you're probably out of a lot of conversations with guys just on the floor. And that 12 months off or out of the group, I think allowed me to probably understand further and much better about views that other guys have and concerns or frustrations that they have towards other players or the group and the footy club. And that was a really great learning experience for me. And I think I've been able to take that forward and massively benefit from it. But I think also I was probably naturally trying to improve regardless of things, I guess, going against me or in another way. And so probably a bit of both, to be honest.
Because one of the great things about you as a footballer is your consistency. You don't play bad games. You're very reliable to your teammates and it's always at a very high level. But Marcus Bonapelli talked about on our program about making teammates better, and that's his absolute number one focus. If he's having a bit of a downer or feels he needs to improve, that's his number one focus. What's your number one focus out on the field to get the best out of yourself?
Yeah, I think it's been probably a similar transition than Marcus a little bit. I think early in your career, you want to obviously establish yourself and earn some respect and then to meet yourself in the game. And then you're trying to take on or be better than players around the league. And then you probably get to a stage where you realise you obviously can't do it yourself. And the ability to influence is probably my focus at the moment, the ability to influence guys on their own journey and hopefully help them, you know, achieve their or close to their potential as quickly as possible. And I think as you play more and more games out there, the game tends to slow down a little bit and you start to be able to see things probably more than just yourself. That's probably been the last, I think, 6 to 12 months of my growth has been able to actually help guys on the field in the heat of battle, which you know, can be tough at times, but that's probably when you get the most joy, I think, when you see guys struggling or need help and you can help them and then get the win. It's very rewarding.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.